The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, plus a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and this is a Sunday Roundup. The Education Secretary Gavin Williamson was tasked with the government's media duties this morning, on the day before schools are due to reopen for the vast majority of children in England. However, there was another issue at the top of the agenda, the government's offer of a 1% pay rise for NHS staff. Sophie Ridge questioned Williamson as to whether the amount was too stingy, given the ordeal the health service has recently been through.
What is it about the last year that's made the government feel that nurses deserve a pay cut in real terms?
Well, the government has at every stage been clear in terms of our commitment to the NHS. This is why over the last year we've seen an extra £6 billion being invested into the NHS. This is why over the next few years we're going to be seeing an increase of close to £34 billion going into the NHS. And over a million NHS staff are going to be receiving pay increases over and above that. But also, we are facing difficult economic challenges. We're facing almost 750,000 people who are unemployed. And we have, in the context of that, decided to exempt the NHS from the public sector pay freeze, which is the only part of the public sector that has been exempted from that.
At the same time, though, nurses are getting a pay rise of 1%. I mean, inflation next year is expected to be 1.5%. So that works out as a pay cut in real terms. I can't help thinking this has got a flavour of Marcus Rashford about it. You know, everyone can see the U-turn coming. Are you just being wheeled out to defend a policy that the government's going to row back on?
Well, over the last few years, we've seen record increases in terms of the pay going to our nurses and our doctors, quite rightly. We're effectively facing a much more difficult economic time and economic period. We've seen a shrinking of our economy of 10%. But what this is part of a process, and we've put this forward for nurses and for the NHS. But we are always investing in our NHS. This is why we've had a record investment this year and continued record investment in our National Health Service over the coming years.
Ridge also asked about the government's plans to help children catch up with months of lost education.
You say there's going to be a process of recovery, and there clearly will have to be, you know, a pretty substantial process of recovery to help children, particularly disadvantaged children, recover from a year of disrupted education. You've got a review going on into seeing how best pupils can catch up. One of the things that you've said it's right to have a discussion about is shortening that summer holiday and potentially moving to a five-term year. Is that something that you're seriously considering?
Well, it's a whole range of different sort of proposals that we're looking at, whether it's a five-term year, whether it's lengthening the school day, but also measures such as enhancing the support that we give to teachers, supporting them in their professional development, making sure they can be actually the very best of themselves. It's looking at different
but
measures.
Specifically on the holidays, is that something that is seriously on the table? It could happen.
Well, we're looking at holidays, we're looking at lengthening the school day, we're looking at a whole range of measures. And we've asked Sir Kevin Collins to leave no stone unturned. For us, we see this as one of those moments, a little bit like the 1944 Education Reform Act that came out of the Second World War, about how we can be transformative in terms of changing and improving the opportunities for young people. But it's got to be evidence-based. We've got to look as to what is going to have the biggest positive impact on children's lives. That's the approach that we're taking, and that's what we're looking at, how we can improve the outcomes for children.
Andrew Marr posed Williamson a rather direct question about his performance of late.
I'm aware that there are a lot of people watching television this morning and thinking to themselves, that Gavin Williamson, he's not quite the right man for this job. Are you sure that you are?
Well, Andrew, what my focus is always on is delivering the very best for children, whether that's you know, extra resources going into school, but most importantly, making sure children are back into the classroom. So, that's where I want to see my children. I think that's where most of your viewers want to. That's where my focus is. That's what we're going to be delivering next week. That's what we're going to be delivering tomorrow.
Let me remind people why I might just have said that, because people remember very vividly back around Christmas when you said schools were going to stay open and then a day later you closed them. They will remember the absolute exam chaos over the summer and the terrible scenes in British universities, and that all happened on your watch. And they perhaps think, when it comes to the big decisions, Gavin Williamson has not been taking the right decisions.
Well, Andrew, we've been dealing with a global pandemic, and we've had to deal with whether it's new variants emerging and other challenges presenting itself. But at every stage, my focus has been doing what is right for children. So I'll be always the first one to want to see schools remain open. I'll always be the first one to want to see children in schools. And I'll never make an apology for wanting to keep our schools open and children having the benefit of a brilliant education in front of their teacher. So that passion for education, passion for delivering for children drives me in this job and what will be driving me to make sure that children are back in school tomorrow.
Marr also interviewed the Shadow Health Secretary, Jonathan Ashworth. Ashworth called for the government to abide by the commitments it had made to the NHS before the pandemic.
The government budgeted 2.1% and they passed that in legislation because their spending plans for the NHS came to the House of Commons and it went through the House of Commons. Every Tory MP voted for 2.1% in January last year. That should be the basis on which negotiations and discussions are now entered into with the trade unions. But the independent pay review body will look at the submission from the RCN. It will look at the submission from Unison, which is the biggest trade union in the country, who are calling for a £2,000 uplift for every member of staff. It will look at the submission from the GMB, who are talking about ensuring that none of the poorer paid staff in the NHS receive less than the living wage.
Inquiry, but let me just ask your belief.
Independent process.
This is a huge amount of money we're talking about. To be fair to the government, they didn't know there was a pandemic at that point. So when they put the 2.1%,
but they did say they would pay for all COVID costs. Rishi Sunak stood up and said the NHS will get all money it needs for COVID. They're now asking NHS staff to take a pay cut to pay for the COVID pressures. That is unfair.
They are. All I want to know is what is the Labour Party's view of how much nurses should get?
The Labour Party's view is that the staff groups are putting... You have a process, Andrew. You look at retention issues. You look at recruitment issues.
But then you have to take a decision.
And then you give it to the independent pay review body who will negotiate with the different trade unions. And then we will honour what that pay review body recommends.
Ridge spoke to the Shadow Foreign Secretary, Lisa Nandy, ahead of key votes on the government's budget this week. Nandy told Ridge why Labour was not backing tax rises, while the Conservatives were.
One of the most significant things to come out of the budget was this freeze in income tax levels. Now, I was kind of under the impression that Labour supported that, but reading The Observer that you're going to vote against it. Can you clear up what is Labour's position?
We are going to vote against it this week. We think that now is absolutely the wrong time to be targeting low and middle income earning families for tax hikes and squeezing their incomes, not least because if you do that, it means that they're not going out and spending on the high streets and the economy. The recovery is very fragile at the moment. We were really concerned when those plans were announced that what the government was effectively saying was that low and middle income earning families would be targeted to start paying into the system a full year before many of those major corporations, because the corporation tax rise doesn't come in until a year later. The Shadow Chancellor pushed the Chancellor on that at the dispatch box. We couldn't get a satisfactory answer. We think this is the wrong thing to do, so we'll be voting against it this week.
You say that the Shadow Chancellor pushed on this, but at the same time, it does feel like it's been a bit of a change of heart. You didn't oppose that earlier in the week, and the Shadow Chancellor told my colleague Kate McCann on Wednesday it would have been the wrong decision to do it now, but more sensible to take these measures in the future. I mean, it is a year in the future. It feels like there's been a change of policy here. Is that a bit opportunistic?
No, we've been absolutely consistent about this, that we don't want to see low and middle income earning families paying the price for this pandemic.
But just to come in here, because you've made the point on low and middle income earners a few times, and yes, I accept that it will impact them, but it does
affect higher rate taxpayers more, doesn't it? It's not targeted at lower
incomes.
It does,
but it does, but we've been consistent in saying that the recovery is very fragile. There are businesses in this country, including many in my constituency here in Wigan, that just haven't been open for most of the last year because we've been in almost permanent lockdown in parts of the north of England. And what they most need to see is families going out and spending again when we start to unlock. They're looking forward to that. They think they can survive if we do that. But if you start to target those families too quickly, what you'll see then is the recovery choked off before it's even begun.
Ridge asked Nandi about the case of Nazanin Zaghari Radcliffe, the British-Iranian woman jailed in Iran on charges of espionage back in 2016, which she has always strongly denied. Zaghari Radcliffe has reportedly been freed from house arrest today, but is also believed to be awaiting a further trial next week.
Her husband, Richard, basically said he doesn't know what's going to happen. Do you have any intelligence on what is likely to happen to Nazanin and what should be done?
I don't. It's been frustratingly slow in relation to progress on this issue. And when I met with Richard Radcliffe recently, it was clear how difficult this process has been. The family are very keen to continue to have the support of the Foreign Office, but I think I can say, frankly, that there just hasn't been enough focus and enough effort, not just on Nazanin's case, which is heartbreaking, but also on the other British dual Iranian nationals who are currently being held in Iran. We need to see much more progress on this. I, when I meet this family, I just feel that there's not much more that they can take of this, to be honest. And other countries have made more progress in getting their nationals home. We need to see a really concerted effort now across government, led by the Prime Minister, to make up for some of the mistakes that he's made in the past and to make sure that we get Nazanin home and other dual nationals home as well.
And finally, Ma asked Dr. Susan Hopkins of Public Health England about what would happen if the infamous R number rises as a result of children going back to school.
If it does go above one, we see a spike in transmission. At that point, do you think we should pause children going back to school?
I don't think we should pause children going back to school. We've got 3 weeks before the Easter holidays. I think we will have time to look at the data very carefully over that period and also then the data in the Easter holidays to see how things are responding. One of the tests that the government have looked at is the relationship between hospitalizations and deaths. And that is going to change in this next phase, because traditionally we knew the amount of cases in community directly related to the number of hospitalizations and deaths that we would see in future weeks. However, with the impact of vaccination, that has changed.
That's all for this week. I'm Isabel Hardman, and this podcast was produced by Matthew Taylor. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffee House Shots podcast on the iTunes store. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do subscribe to our daily evening blend email. It's a free roundup of all the political news each day, along with analysis and a diary on what to expect next. Just go to spectator.co.uk/eveningblend. Thanks for listening, and do join us again next week.